At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday afternoon, and welcome to another edition of the MotorOne.com Test Car Happy Hour. I am MotorOne.com Managing Editor Brandon Turkus, and joining me in the hat is Mr. Brett T. Evans, Senior Editor for MotorOne.com, and joining him without the hat is Mr. Jeffrey Perez, Senior Editor, MotorOne.com. We are here, and we're going to be talking about some cars that we've been driving over the past week, but before we do that, be sure to chime into the comments. Let us know where you're at. Say hello. Let us know if you have any questions about the cars. Just look at Brett's wild hair and understand why he's wearing a hat. So right now we're going to start off with Brett, who has been driving a very blue Audi. Brett, take it away.
Yeah, the hair is because I gunned it at a stoplight and it just went whoop. So yeah, we're wearing a hat today. Anyway, no, this thing is rad. I was very surprised when they dropped this off how much I like it. I like Audis. I like, it's, you know, they're great. I have nothing against them, but they never really like strike me as super enthusiastic, with maybe the exception of the RS3. But I got in this thing and I had an absolute blast. This is kind of a cool feature. When you walk up to it and open the door, it instantly raises a couple of inches to let you get in a little bit more easily, which is kind of cool. It's just a really awesome big boss sedan, though. I have a great time driving it. I've had a great time driving it for the last couple of days. I think it's got the 4-liter twin turbocharged V8, something in the way of 500 horsepower, which is just a ton of power from this little guy. A whole lot of fun. Some cool features, the vents you see, they hide behind a panel of carbon fiber when they're not active, and the shutter comes up. It's just kind of a cool, like, techno piece. All around, everywhere you look in this car, there's something interesting to look at. But yeah, by and large, I was expecting it to be pretty middling. The A8 is kind of a boring, not a super interesting, super exciting, like, offering in its standard form, but the S8 is incredible. Here's that party piece. If I can find that. Yeah, there it goes. Yeah, it was just awesome. So one of the comments that just came in, Audi S8 is a good vehicle, but no match for the S-Class or 7 Series. I think you're absolutely right. I think that the S8 was competitive maybe 5 or 6 years ago, but now there's a new S-Class, there's a new 7 Series, both of which are much more like technologically advanced. So I think you're probably right about that. But it's still just been a really entertaining vehicle to drive. I did a funny connection in my brain a couple of days ago that a couple years ago, when I was brand new at Motor One, my birthday was coming up, and I ordered a Cadillac Blackwing, CT6 Blackwing with a twin turbocharged V8. My birthday is tomorrow, and I have another twin turbocharged V8 to spend it in. And so I think that might be my new thing that I try and do, is just get a big boss luxury sedan every time I have a birthday to celebrate.
You should do that.
I did that on purpose. I knew it was coming, so I just made sure that you were well catered for.
I did that. You had no part in it, my friend. Audi booked us in this a couple of weeks ago, and they had to cancel the booking, so we got to reschedule it. And I knew this would be a great car to spend my birthday in. So, but yeah, no, it's been great. It's a whole lot of fun. Definitely a lot more fun than I was expecting, given its size, given the age of the platform. Awesome vehicle. And Brandon, you were just saying that you're going to be getting its little brother in a couple of weeks too.
Yeah, I'm going to be driving an S6 in a few weeks, taking it up with my buddies to go golfing. It'll be good for that. What I was curious about this, so I did the first drive when they launched this generation of A8, and at the time it was only available with, I believe it was a turbocharged V6.
Yeah.
And it was just anemic. I mean, it was just not enough power for that car. It never really had the acceleration that you know, a flagship luxury sedan demanded. Does it feel a bit more appropriate in the S8, and does it go too far towards performance in this application?
I don't think so. You know, this one also has like the road previewing suspension. So it is really cushy going over like speed bumps and stuff like that. It is a really cushy car. Also has the premium or the executive package with the leather dashboard that you see right there. And it's, I think it has the comfort rear seats. It's a 5-seat configuration, but it's still a pretty posh, incredibly spacious place to be. I should have shown the rear seats in the video, but I didn't. But tons and tons of space for sure. But no, so yeah, I just looked it up. 563 horsepower, which is in absolutely no stretch of the imagination anemic at all. This is a really fast, really thrilling car to drive for sure. It is kind of weird that they don't have like a middle tier model between the, I think, I can't remember, it's a 355 horse V6, I think. And then you get 200 more horsepower the next rung up when you go all the way to the S8. So it's kind of weird. This car has the RS6 state of tune for that 4-liter twin turbo, but it's not an RS product. So I kind of wonder what it would be like if they offered like a detuned S8 and then a really sporty, really exciting RS8 like this one. But yeah.
I remember driving an A8 a few years ago on this platform, and like you and Brandon both said, just like kind of disappointed, kind of anemic, like not really super comfortable even as far as like compared to an S-Class or 7 Series. But this one to me is like, probably feels like it fixes a lot of the issues that I had with this car, with the engine, with the better suspension tuning and a little bit of the visual stuff. So I'm really like intrigued by this car. But I think still to the point to whoever commented earlier, like it still doesn't feel like it's up to snuff with the new 7 Series or even, I mean, Genesis doesn't really have a sporty G90, but I don't know. It feels like it's old in a segment that's pretty new, relatively speaking.
Well, yeah, it came out at a really uncomfortable time, I think, because it was the new kid on the block for like a year, but then, and maybe there's some COVID time compression going on here that makes it feel, you know, more recent than it was. But, you know, not long after that, the new S-Class came out, the new 7 Series came out, the G90 came out, which swings in the entirely opposite direction of performance and is much more comfortable. I feel like that, you know, Audi just, it was just a bad draw on when this car came out and where the market was at.
I mean, the A8 family has never been like a huge, you know, like the D3, I think, is that what I'm thinking of? The Transporter A8 was like kind of a high watermark for them where, D3, the D3 A8 was like, that was big and large and in charge, and it kind of like ushered in Audi's new styling language with like the big single frame grille and some features like that. That was really bold. But before and since, it's always kind of been and also ran in the luxury, like the full size luxury space. Not quite as you know, exciting as a BMW or luxurious as a Mercedes. And so, I don't know. I like, even if it had debuted at a perfect time, I think we might still have overlooked it just a little bit, just because it doesn't quite push. You can see in that interior, you know, like for better or worse, the screen count is down on any of the other cars in the class, and the digital real estate is down a whole lot. And there's just not as quite as many like gewgaws and things to play with. And it kind of feels a little bit like, in that respect, it feels a little bit like an old Jaguar where you're paying for engineering, you're not paying for toys, but it still just kind of doesn't quite tick that like super ultra luxurious full size sedan thing that it probably needs to. This one costs $150,000, and that's a whole lot of money to spend for like, you know, you're just not getting a ton of like features for your money. You're getting great power. I think it looks fantastic. I do love the way that it like rolls down the road. It feels very like, just feels so boss, you know, like I don't know how to say it without just kind of like defaulting to like stupid 80s phrases, but it just like, it's bitchin', it's boss, it just feels so cool to drive around in this thing. But it's still not, it's just, I don't know, it's a lot of money to spend for something that doesn't actually offer like a substantive specific benefit.
I gotta say, I was watching that video of as it lifted up when the doors open, and like I question the value of that in terms of ingress egress, but more than that, it just makes the car look wildly unproportioned, like, or oddly proportioned. Like, it looks really, really, like, kind of screwed up.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot say I'm a fan of that.
the way that it sits right now, I'm looking at it in my driveway right now. The way that it sits right now without the air springs aired up, it looks fantastic. It's a great vehicle. You know, as with any Audi, it's very cleanly designed and well-proportioned and stuff like that. But it does look hilarious with the suspension jacked up like that. It's also a safety feature too. I think Audi was one of the first to do this where in the event of an impending side impact collision, the car will jack itself up, I think like 5 or 6 inches to give you like really good impact protection from like a taller vehicle, for example. And it ensures what's that?
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
It ensures that the impact is spread across like the rocker panel and the door pillars rather than the window and like coming right at your face. So it's a really cool safety feature that hopefully you'll never have to use. But yeah, it does look kind of funny when it's jacked up like that.
Yeah, when I did the launch, they demoed that for us. They had like, you know, you pull up the A8 to like, and they have a sled coming towards it that stops like 8 inches short or something like that, but enough to trigger the system. And like, it's a pretty substantial amount. Like you feel the side of the car kick up to absorb the brunt of the impact. Like it's not a subtle thing. Yeah. That aspect of it, I think is really, really good. Like anything that makes a car safer, it just in terms of like pure aesthetics, when it's sitting there, it just looks kind of dopey.
Pretty funny for sure.
Well, so I just went back and looked at my i7 review I did a few months ago, and the one that I drove was 156,000. Because I was not expecting you to say 150,000 for this car. That seems insane. And that BMW had the big movie screen in the back, hands-free driving, like the newest, best, greatest technology. And it was only, I mean, it's not a performance car, obviously, but it's only 30 horsepower down on this. Like, I don't know. This is a really tough sell for me for 150 grand for this car when you can get so much more than some of the other cars in this class.
Yeah, 150 grand. I'm buying a Panamera. Like, you know, there's no question of that at this price point, what I'm going to park myself in, or a Taycan, if I'm honest. Screw the people in the back. As long as I'm having fun.
Well, and you know, I kind of mentioned earlier, the RS6 is pretty much very much the same car, except the same engine, same state of tune, a little bit more performance oriented for sure, and a little bit stiffer and not quite as comfortable. But I had the RS6 a couple of weeks ago, and it was marvelous. I mean, it was just as good as everyone says it is. It was about the same price. It's a station wagon and it's like cooler to look at for sure. So, I don't know. I kind of agree that would kind of be a hard sell, on the part of the S8. I still love it. I mean, I really have had a great time driving it, and, I think it looks fantastic. It definitely feels like very, you know, I was driving around a couple of days ago and I came across some friends and they like commented on what a big, cool looking car it was. So, you know, it's got that going for it, but yeah, it's a hard sell at that price.
So let's talk about something that is a much, well, probably an equally hard sell at a much more affordable price. The vehicle that I've been driving this week, it is the Honda CR-V Sport Touring Hybrid. This is a $40,000 Honda CR-V. Well, you guys didn't hear it. Mr. Brett Evans and I were kind of lambasting this thing a little bit before the pod started. It is so Honda's entire strategy at the moment, you're seeing it with the Accord especially, is, you know, really focusing on hybrid vehicles. And you know, this is the most powerful version of the Accord or the CR-V that you can get right now. I want to say combined system output is, let's see, 181 horsepower and 204 horsepower, total system output. And the electric motor alone is good for 247 pound feet. So Brett, I'm going to bounce it to you because we're on the same page here. Where is that power? It's on the spec sheet.
Definitely on the spec sheet. I don't know. It's kind of crazy. So this car usually operates as a series hybrid where the gasoline engine charges the battery, which sends power to the electric motors, which send power to the wheels. So the electric motors are acting as the transmission in this car's case. You would think that like with 247 pound feet of torque on tap, it would feel a lot squirtier than it does, but it kind of, it's a, I don't know. It's kind of a letdown. It's not nearly as not nearly as entertaining to drive as the turbo from lesser models or last year's CRV. I don't know. It's an odd one. Hard to say.
It's interesting because I noticed it, like, and it's in these really strange situations, like pulling into my driveway and accelerating up the driveway to where I usually park the car. Like, I feel the torque there when I'm out at, like, you know, very, very partial throttle and like on electric power alone. But I was telling these guys before we started the pod, you know, I went to make an unguarded left turn yesterday and it was a little bit tight and I stood in the accelerator pedal and it was just nothing but noise. It just no real motion to speak of. The gas engine it's an Atkinson cycle, a 2-liter four cylinder. It's noisy, like it's noisy and harsh sounding. And even at idle, like, you know, I turned it on, went to pull out of a parking spot and the battery was mostly depleted. So the gas engine started running and it was just this unpleasant coarse sound that is very, very unfamiliar for a four cylinder Honda engine. I don't really understand what's going on here.
Yeah. Jonathan Brown said something to that kind of makes sense, that people could care less. When you're talking about dynamics, I think that makes sense, right? Because like, yeah. Not a lot of cars, yeah, in this segment are really amazing to drive. But I think when you're talking about like engine vibration and harshness and sound, you totally want something that's not loud and crashy. And, you know, there are some cars I've driven in this class that are just like, man, how could I live with this every day? I have to turn the volume up so loud. I have to talk like really loud to whoever's sitting in the passenger seat. And I haven't driven this one to be fair, but if that's the case, that's kind of a pretty bad ding for me.
Well, I'll take it one step further, because if you are Mr. I don't care about cars going into the Honda dealership and being like, you know what, I've had my current CRV for a few years, I want to upgrade to the new one, and you have some smooth talking dealer that's like, well, this is the most powerful version we have and it's the most efficient, and you go and buy it on that basis, and the first time you pull out of the parking lot and stand on it and nothing happens, you're gonna be like, well, this is kind of crap. Why is this the case? This wasn't the case with my turbocharged 1.5 liter on my old CRV. You know, I appreciate Honda's decision. And, you know, Brett and I were talking about the Accord with the hybrid is actually really, really great. But I don't understand the problem with the CRV, because there's just no power. I mean, it is just gutless and noisy. And those are two things that I never would have said about the last generation CRV.
I think
now, how does
go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
I was just going to say, how does the hybrid compare to the gas model? Because we all drove it last year for Star Awards and I didn't think it was too underpowered. It definitely wasn't quick, but it wasn't like slow.
That's kind of what's surprising is this, the, I think the gas model, I'm just going to look it up because I don't want to guess, but
I got it right here. It's 190 horsepower on 179 pound feet of torque, but it is 500 pounds lighter at its lightest than this all wheel drive hybrid.
So that's probably where a lot of it comes in is the weight. I think the weight is the CRV hybrid's problem, because the Accord hybrid is about 400 pounds lighter and it doesn't feel nearly as flat footed. It feels a lot more, it's not fast. It's not like the old, you know, 2-liter turbo or anything like that, but it feels much more able to just kind of blend into traffic. The gas engine it's the exact same powertrain, same engine, same motors, everything like that. The gas engine feels either it's better insulated or it's not working as hard. And it just doesn't feel like you're making as much of a sacrifice to go for the hybrid, which gets amazing fuel economy, admittedly, in both the CRV and the Accord.
You know,
it doesn't feel like you're making as much of a sacrifice to go for the hybrid in the Accord as it does in the CRV.
You know, do you guys think that this powertrain is kind of a victim of Honda's own success, because we all like the turbocharged 1.5 liters so much? I mean, it's a great engine in the Civic. It was great in the CRV. It still is great in the CRV. It's still the engine I would buy in the Accord. I mean, it's a very, very likable little thing. Do you think that's kind of coloring our perception of the hybrid a little bit?
Yeah, that's possible. I was just looking at my HRV first drive because I was trying to think of, I remember the differences in those engines too being pretty pretty different. I guess I drove the 2 liter, but in any case, like the differences between the base or the turbocharged 1.5 and the other engines that Honda has in some of their cars is like, it is pretty noticeable, because I think that 1.5 is really good, especially here in the CRV.
Yeah. And to that exact end, the HRV, it's the naturally aspirated 2 liter, and it feels a little bit flat on its feet too. So I think it's just that Honda kind of has that small displacement turbo thing down really well.
So let's shift gears a little bit. And I did want to talk about what the things I do like about this car, because there are some things, you know, I said in our annual end of year best and worst cars we drove, I called the CRV the worst car that I drove. And that was more because this segment has advanced in such a dramatic way. But there are still some things this vehicle does really, really well. I don't know how Honda keeps pulling it off, but the seating position and the seats themselves in all of their cars are just absolutely fantastic. I mean, this feels like a car that, or a seat that belongs in something much sportier. It's got a relatively low H point. The bolsters are huge. It's super, super deep and comfortable. You just kind of slide into it and you don't really want to move. The seating position is fantastic with where the steering wheel is at. I mean, your sight lines are really good. It's a very nice place to sit and just do a drive, even if like the material quality or the overall design doesn't blow you out of the water. At least you're very comfortable. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say that I agree with that. I don't know what it is that Honda just nails kind of like interior dynamics and seating position and stuff like that. And even just how comfortable the seats are. I know in the base, like Sportage, the seats are pretty bad. I've spent a lot of time driving that car recently, and it's just like, after a while, your back and your butt are like really sore, but I never had that issue in the CRV.
Yeah.
They're a people company, you know, like they've always kind of said that that from the beginning, like Soichiro Honda's goal was just to like mobilize people and get people moving. And I think that it kind of just comes down to that they like ergonomics is a huge deal at Honda, and it always has been, just making sure that people get in and they know exactly where everything is. And, you know, the company kind of lost its way when they went like all buttonless and, you know, everything happens on the screens and whatever, but they're kind of making their way back. And the CRV is a great example of that.
Sorry, I was muted there. Now here's the question for you both. This car costs $40,000 as tested, 39.1 to start, and then a $1,295 destination charge. How else would you spend $40,000 other than buy a CRV? Because I feel like there are a lot of more compelling options, including our Star Award winner, the Kia Sportage Hybrid.
That's it for me. I had a great time in the Sportage when we were testing it last year. I also really liked, I drove a Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid that was more expensive. It was about 45 or 46, but that one was amazing. I loved that car. It had turbocharged and electric torque all at once, so it was genuinely fast. So I would probably go for one of the Korean options.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Sportage Hybrid is still my favorite in the class. Some people in the comments are saying better than RAV4. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the RAV4 is getting a little older now, like even though it's only a few years old. It definitely feels a little flimsier inside. But yeah, I still think Sportage Hybrid might be the choice.
I mean, I think total package of the RAV4 is arguably one of the worst in the class right now. Simply not because it's bad. It's just old. There's not a lot that can be done about that. I'm gonna come at you guys with an off kilter one and say I would have a Volkswagen Tiguan would be my purchase.
Oh God, would you?
That's a choice.
I like the Tiguan a lot. A loaded Tiguan. Oh. I like the look. I like the dynamics. Like, you know what? I like to be stranded by the side of the road every once in a while. What more could I possibly ask for?
You know, along those same lines, I actually was spending time on the Mitsubishi builder the other day, and I think I'd probably do an Outlander plug-in. For you can get a base one for 35 or a loaded one for like 45. I'd probably do that, because
the Outlander plug-in is really great. I was actually surprised.
I'm still waiting for. I want to see the Nissan Rogue's 1 point or 3-cylinder turbo end up in the Outlander, because that will be a just amazing package.
Yeah. I'm going to interrupt real quick. Let's have some decorum in the comments, folks. Yes. No personal attacks. This feels like it's getting a little bit personal. So keep your comments constructive and positive. Thank you.
Yes, what Brett said. Only the hosts are allowed to attack each other. All right. Speaking of attacking each other,
Mr. Jeff Perez.
Let's talk about the car that I've simply been deriding all week as just a black Challenger.
Yeah. So I am driving the Dodge Challenger. Let me see if I can remember this because it's like a novel title. Dodge Challenger Black Ghost Last Call, which is one of the Last Call special editions that they're rolling out as the Challenger and Charger go away. And on the one hand, I have not driven a Hellcat Challenger in a long time. And so getting behind the wheel of this was like super refreshing. And I don't know why, because I've never been a big Challenger person, but it feels very old school compared to some of the other cars that we've been driving recently, especially with all the EV stuff. And it is just such a joy to drive. It is so big and soft and fast and comfortable. Like, I totally understand why people go crazy for this car and why it survived really as long as it has. This one has 807 horsepower as part of the special edition package, which is awesome. Everything else is part of the special edition package. And I'm going to agree with Brandon here. It's a little weak. Like, this is one of 300 that they're going to sell. It is a $99,000 car. And that Dodge badge there on the hood is made of like a flimsy, foamy plastic. It's not even metal. It's not even like hard plastic. And the E is falling off, like in this picture, if you look really close. I don't know why some of the things that they did on here are like, I don't know. It's a very confusing car to me. It looks awesome, I think. But yeah, I think they really could have upped it a little bit as far as the special edition goes.
Can I ask about that Dodge logo on the nose? Because I think it is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
But why are all the letters so close together? Like, you have the biggest canvas. Why don't you spread it out a little bit? And it does look kind of tacked on. Like, I think if there was a little bit more artistry to how it was applied, like, oh wow, that's bad.
Yeah, look at it. Yeah, that's I noticed it about 2 days into the loan, and I went to go like try and see that like someone had broke the plastic. It's not even hard plastic. It's just like a flimsy little thing that was coming up off the hood. I think it looks cool.
Is it like the cheap badges that people put on like their 97 like E-Class to make it an E63, but like the font is totally wrong kind of thing? Because that's kind of what it reminds me of a little bit.
Yeah, kind of. I think I said this earlier in the week, but it feels like, you know, you go to Michael's and you're getting like bubble letters for your child's poster for their project. That's what it feels like when you touch it, which kind of sucks. The Challenger script in the grill and on the side is really cool. It's really nice, like high quality badge. You get the hood clips. You get, I think, let me see what size wheels these are. These are 20-inch wheels. They look awesome. I mean, in general, it's still a Hellcat Challenger and it still has 800 horsepower and it's still awesome. But I'm trying to figure out why you would spend 99 grand on this car unless you're like a huge Dodge Challenger, like collector or enthusiast, or you're going to flip it in 10 years on Bring a Trailer and make, you know, double what you paid for it.
I mean, do we think there's going to be a market on Bring a Trailer for these Last Call cars, simply because there are so many of them coming? I mean, there are like 7 different versions and each one is going to be 300 units or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, this one is one of 300.
And it's not like Hellcats are exactly hard to find right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
like
know.
There are going to be people who are going to pay through the nose for that like nostril grill, you know, like some dyed in the wool Dodge fanboy is going to go hard for not the nostril grill, sorry, the nostril hood. Someone's going to go hard for that. Like, you know, so there's a market on Bring a Trailer for everything. They've got a Chevrolet Corsica on there right now. So, you know,
hey man, the Corsica is a badass car.
There's Kyle, there's also a good picture of the hood or the roof on this thing, which has an alligator skin pattern, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, but why?
Out in the Everglades.
It's not the alligator edition. It's the black ghost or
the Black Ghost is an original. It's like an original, like a 70s special edition Challenger, and it came with an alligator print vinyl roof and then like the nostril hood and everything like that. So that's what they're trying to go back to.
It is a throwback. There's actually some, I don't have a picture of it, but the interior has a little bit of alligator skin texture on the passenger side. There's like a little placard that says Black Ghost, and it has the same sort of texture, which is kind of cool. The interior is nothing otherwise. It's just a Challenger Hellcat. But yeah, that's about it. I don't know. I'm almost with Brandon on this, saying like, it's cool, but why?
All right. So here's where I get controversial with it. So this is based on the Challenger Red Eye, right? 797 horsepower. This one's up to 807 because it would be, that's equivalent to what, the Super Stock. I think it's worse than the regular 707 horsepower Challenger.
Just in general because it exists, or like,
no, I think that it is the fact that, so every Hellcat is under tired. I mean, there's the tires are not wide enough. They're not sticky enough. They don't do nearly enough to help manage all that power. Really, the only thing managing the power is your right foot. I think that the extra 100 horsepower of the Red Eye or whatever, you know, 800 horsepower version is just like the straw that breaks the camel's back and makes it that much more difficult and unpleasant to drive. The engine revs so much more quickly. There's the lack of grip that you have to deal with. It's just a less pleasant car to drive. It's kind of what, you know, what I was afraid the Hellcat would be the first time I drove it. And then I got into like the 707 horsepower one. I'm like, this thing's a pussycat. This thing is easy as hell to drive and live with. And this is the 800 horsepower tune is just not, it's just not as likable.
I think I said something similar when the Hellcat models came out, that it was still too much, right? Like, you're not going to be using all of that power all the time. And when you are, then it gets kind of dangerous. This is kind of the same thing to me. It doesn't feel like that much crazier, I guess maybe a little bit, but you still can't put your foot all the way down and like just hammer it down the road. Like, it's crazy. It's too much. So I think that's kind of true of all of them. I don't know.
No, I don't see. I'm pretty comfortable like standing on the accelerator in a regular Hellcat. Like, it's, I don't know. I might be splitting hairs a little bit, but it just doesn't feel quite as crazy as this. It's still crazy, but in like a likable, like Robin Williams crazy, whereas this is more like Charles Manson crazy. Does that make any sense?
I was waiting for who that second person was going to be.
It's so much worse than I thought it was going to be. I was expecting,
what,
like,
did you think it was going to be?
Or something like that.
Yeah. Jonathan Brown makes a good point. Total lack of composure is what cracks the owners up. I agree with that. I mean, there are so many people out there who buy these cars. Wasn't it still the best-selling pony car last year, technically?
Yeah, they can't sell enough of the things. Or they can't build enough of the things. It's I don't really understand. We're going to take a second. Guys, let's take it easy in the comments. Otherwise, the ban hammer will start coming out. So that's just the way it's going to be. We're going to behave ourselves.
No more personal attacks, guys. That's our purview and only our purview.
Yep. So let's go back to talking about why I was wrong about this Challenger. It's not there for me. I understand that people love them. I think that's great. I am kind of curious what's going to happen with the Challenger fan base when this is no longer a thing.
I just love that Fiat Chrysler and Stellantis have been printing money on this car, because it's designed on a chassis that is literally 30 years old. I just love that, like, they bought some licensed W210 platform stuff from Daimler Chrysler and built a muscle car on it and haven't updated it once in almost 20 years, and they've just been printing money.
And that's a remarkable thing, is they, if it were not, honestly, should I say this? If it were, I think if it were not for the new ownership at Stellantis, that these last call cars would not be happening. They would continue to sell them until it became no longer profitable to do so, or until it was regulated out of existence.
Oh yeah, I bet there would be like a modest facelift and some interior changes, and then they just keep selling them for another 10 years, and they'd probably do really well. Like there's no reason they shouldn't, other than just the changes that they're making as a bigger company, like towards EVs. But this car still sells like crazy, and people still love it. And I get it. I got into this car and I drove it for 5 minutes, and I was like, yeah, this is cool. Maybe not my like favorite car in the world, but it's really cool, and I understand why people really love these things.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to get myself into one more time just before. Like I think I've had like three. Like this is gonna be my last Hellcat loans. Like because I just, you know, it keeps on sticking around, and yeah.
I, you know, just for what it's worth, I've only ever driven it in the Durango. So if you want to send a muscle car my way, I'd be a happy
Have you
guy.
Really?
And it was, I mean, the Durango is a great vehicle to drive it in because it is also a pussycat and it's all-wheel drive and it is hilariously fast for what it is. So I'm not going to complain too much, but.
Oh God, I gotta rectify that. Well, yes, that will happen, and we'll have you on the happy hour to discuss.
Give me the one with the drag chute, please.
There's one. I can't keep them all straight anymore.
The optional drag chute on the back.
You know what we should do, and I'm going to say this on video so that our readers and viewers hear this. We should do like a Hellcat send off video with all the three Hellcat models and get them all together and do some crazy stuff and be a good time.
Just rip some donuts for 10 straight minutes and then
exactly
print and publish.
Reenact Vanishing Point.
That's a deep cut. Good job.
I try. We're talking about 70s Challenger stuff. So, all right. So do you guys want to give a preview of what we're going to be driving next week? Just to kind of wet the whistle of everyone that's coming along.
Oh, it's going to be exciting.
What do you got, Brett?
Actually it is going to kind of be cool. I'm going to be in a 2024 Mercedes GLC. I thought it was going to be a lot more boring, but it's going to be the new GLC, which I'm looking forward to driving.
We're under embargo on that. I don't think we can talk about that yet, but
that's right. I can't talk about driving. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Womp womp. Jeffrey, what do you got?
I am in a Chevy Suburban High Country, which is going to be a big old SUV.
Daddy wagon.
And I will be in two cars, actually, because I'm a glutton. I'll be driving the new Subaru Impreza. That is the 2.5 RS. I'm actually kind of excited about that. But I'm much more excited for the full-size Ford Bronco Heritage Edition that will be showing up on Monday. And, of course, Monday we also – well, no, we won't. It'll be the three of us next week, too. So you guys, you rabid Seth Miersma fans, will have to wait until May 5th. Which is when he'll be back for the next happy hour. But for right now, want to thank everybody for tuning in, watching, commenting. If you want to find out more about all of these cars or just check out what else we're doing, head over to MotorOne.com, check out our social media channels, like, follow, subscribe, all of those good things. And thank you very much for watching. Brett, Jeff, thank you guys for being here. And we'll see everybody next week.
Later, guys.
See ya.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. So just like you, he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.